from the Los Angeles Underground. It's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex.
It's like honey in your ear hole.
Why are you laughing, Justine?
I was like mid-stretch and inhale, exhale.
Did you learn that at your gym, at your Pilates class that you're taking?
It was a bar class.
Oh, it was a barre class. Is that why you couldn't finish Treasure this year?
Did it involve? No. Mm-hmm.
What is barre?
It's just like a lot of exercising, like stretches, just like long stretches.
So
she really got my legs though yesterday.
So kind of like yoga.
Is
that a thing?
Because it's a joke.
Kind of between yoga and Pilates.
Do the meditation.
What's Pilates?
It's kind of like calisthenics.
Pilates.
Jane Fonda is Pilates, isn't she?
Pilates is kind of like calisthenics. What's that from? Does anyone know?
Calisthenics.
It's from the Avengers. I do Pilates. What's Pilates? Kind of like calisthenics, Cap.
That's a real fifth grade. We're going to do some calisthenics.
Yeah, calisthenics.
Go outside,
some toe touches and some side bends.
Jumping
and
jacks.
You can do side bends or sit-ups, John, but please don't lose that butt.
What's that from?
John.
Yeah.
Baby got back. Sir Mix-a-Lot, John.
That
was kind of cute.
John, you just lost a lot of street cred.
Because your waisted tight, your curves are kicking?
I have zero.
And I plan on sticking?
Wait, you didn't know it was Oakland, LA face with an Oakland booty. What did you think it was?
I don't remember.
He said something else. Say it again, though.
I don't even remember.
He said Oakland Dace, didn't he? Or Oakland Ace?
I don't know. Ace? Dace? I don't know.
It was a few episodes ago, though, because I remember you got roasted on that.
Listen back and you'll
see. LA face with an Oakland booty.
I can guarantee you it was not Oakland.
Yeah, you did not.
LA face with an Oakland booty.
Yeah.
My favorite line from that, though, is when he's describing the measurements. He goes, "That's okay if you're 5 foot one."
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. 36, 34, 36.
Only she's 5'3".
Only she's 5'3".
Yeah.
He's really mad about it, too. Sir Mix-a-Lot. Knighted. Can you imagine?
Sir Mix-a-Lot. Yeah.
Arise, wow. Sir Mix-a-Lot. And behind him is Ray Davies and Paul McCartney. He's like, we get knighted too.
Listen, guys, it's a
does it mean nothing anymore?
We have a right. Everybody's getting these.
Everybody's getting.
It's
this
like a Presidential Medal of Freedom now.
Yeah. They used to
Sir Patrick Stewart. Sir,
they used
Ian
to
McKellen.
Mean something. No, just everybody gets them.
Sir Ray Davies.
I mean,
everybody.
Well, Ray Davies. He needs it, but I mean, he should have it. But really, Sir Mick Jagger, if you had said in 1965, this guy's going to be knighted, he's going to be Sir Mick Jagger.
He's still got the moves, though.
He does.
Yeah, it's true. All right, guys, we got a lot to talk about today. It's packed, densely packed show. We got John Sandy here. You've heard him already. You've heard that trademark
howdy.
Laugh.
Howdy.
Patrick is here.
Howdy.
Jake is here.
Hello.
And of course, the lovely Justine is here.
Howdy, 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 howdy.
And we have a special guest who may or may not speak. She's a huge fan of the show. She's listened to every episode since the beginning. Is that true?
No.
I know. I'm going, really?
She's the better half of Jake and Sandy. It's Sandy, everybody. How you doing, Sandy?
Doing good.
Are you pumped?
Super pumped.
What is it like to be here after listening to all these episodes? You're seeing it come together live.
It's kind of like listening to it, but then there's faces around, but
you're just
sounds like podcast.
Yeah. Is it good? Is that good or bad?
It's kind of weird.
This is kind of weird.
So the real question, does it ruin the magic for you?
I thought you were going to say underwhelming. How is it? Underwhelming.
Is it underwhelming? Hey, is that Eduardo right there with the Ghostbuster shirt on?
No, that's a small child.
So
a small child. Every time the bell rings.
Every time a bell rings, Eduardo gets a shout out.
When that door opens, we're going to be honest. Yeah.
Teacher says every time the door rings, Eduardo gets his wings.
I love it.
That's right. Attaboy, Eduardo. That's right.
You did it, Eduardo.
We didn't see any James Stewart this week, but it felt like he should have made an appearance at least once.
I was hoping he'd show up in like Sierra Madre.
He was actually going to be...
go get him, Tommy.
He was actually up for the part mind. Of Al in Grapes of Wrath, the younger brother. He was actually up for that.
Really?
That would have been great.
39.
Yeah. All right, let's... First of all, old business... Did anyone watch the new version of All Quiet on the Western Front?
Yeah, I've seen the new one.
You still haven't watched it, Jake?
Because I watched the one we're supposed to watch.
Okay, then we'll wait. We'll wait. John and I have seen it.
You can see. Yes, you can talk about it. I imagine it, like, it being
a week ago. I saw it.
I watched the old one.
If it's very similar, then
we want to give a quick review. Some of us got to see the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, guys. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think?
It's fantastic.
Talk about it.
Mm, I loved it.
Let's not go into too many details, yeah. But we don't want to spoil anything. And Sandy's here; she hasn't seen it, so this is definitely going to be a spoiler-free review.
Right,
John. What just overall? What did you think?
I loved it. I'm ready to see it again.
And how did you feel it invoked 1960s Hollywood?
Perfect. And you know, because this is a guy who's a stickler for details. So I mean, you heard right? He got them to shut down traffic on Hollywood Boulevard for like 3 or 4 days. They shot on Hollywood Boulevard. They redressed some of the storefronts to look like theaters.
Yeah, it looked great.
That were long since gone. And food is, you know, not like Musso and Frank's. It still looks like it did 50 years
sure.
ago. But some places, he got them to do it.
The Frolic Room, I made an appearance there right next to
that. Yeah, El Coyote. I mean, places that are still there. But there's a couple theaters that have been like boarded over and turned into like, you know, souvenir shops. And he was able to get that all dressed up. He didn't want to do it with CGI. So he asked Hollywood if he could shut down the street for about half a week.
That's pretty good.
Pretty amazing. The cars, the music, the clothes.
I was telling these guys, it reminded me a little bit of a lot of American Graffiti, and that the radio is kind of another character.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Very well done. Very well done.
Really disappointed they didn't depict LA traffic. Apparently there was no traffic in the 60s.
Well, 69, it wasn't what it is now.
No. Must have been nice.
Didn't you watch an episode of Chips from like 76?
I mean,
they're out on the 210 freeway, and it's
you ever see an episode of Dragnet from like 67? You go, where are the cars? It's the freeway. And you go, where's the traffic?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I just don't think it was what it is now. Yeah.
People didn't realize how great California was yet.
I mean, LA wasn't as packed as it is now, no. You know, in 68, 69.
So how familiar with it? Well, John and I, of course, being old, how familiar was everybody with the... with Sharon Tate and her story, were you guys familiar with it at all?
Yes.
Yeah, brother really liked the whole Sharon Tate Manson story when we were growing up. Like, he read the book and stuff like that.
Helter Skelter?
Yeah, he was into, like, crime drama and stuff. So, pretty familiar, so it was a nice, interesting
thing. That was one of the first, like, true crime kind of obsessions for a lot of people.
Everybody read the book, and then they did that movie.
Yeah. And then, of course, you too, with their poignant... Charles Manson stole this from the Beatles.
Christ.
And now we're stealing it back.
Now we're going to say his name. It's like we had a chance of getting it back, but you just said his name again.
What a jerk. that always made me...
I know, you too.
So,
Bono's so full of himself.
So pompous.
This song was stolen by Charles Manson. We're going to steal it right back. Good for you, Bono. Yahoo.
So you're not a U2 fan, huh?
You know... Yeah. A little of them goes a long way.
Sure. Where the Streets Have No Name.
Sweetest Things. It's a good song too.
Jake, what'd you think, man?
I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Definitely captured the essence of the 60s. And I thought Leonardo DiCaprio did an amazing job.
Yeah.
Same with Brad Pitt. What's her face? Margot Robbie. Really didn't see her all that much in there.
Which was kind of interesting the way she kind of...
She did good. It was just you really didn't get to see her all that much.
She was a thread that was kind of running in the background of the story.
Yeah. But, I mean, the scenes you did see her in, she was really charming. When she, watched her first, her first movie, and she was all excited, and I thought that was...
And that was really her in the clip. They used the actual... Yeah. The actual clip.
That was a nice touch.
From the Wrecking Crew.
It's kind of a nice...
What's wrong, honey? What's wrong? I just called you honey in the most... deplorable way. But what's wrong?
We're talking about the 60s. It's okay.
Yeah. What's wrong, sweetie?
They added that in the movie, how she got into the movie theater, because that happened to Tarantino when he was trying to watch his own movie. And then he had to prove that it was him. They showed him his name. And then the manager came out and asked, and they were like, no. And then some fans came up to him and asked for his autograph. And he was like, see? And... That's when they let him in finally. Because they were like, how do you know this guy? They're like, he's the director.
Okay. I am the director of this movie. And
so that's how that got added into the movie.
Maybe if you just watch and you see the shots of all the feet, you'll know who it is.
And then he spits on you.
And then,
But that happened.
A polarizing figure, if there ever was one.
Well, you know, what the hell? Yeah. I mean, when he's promoting a movie, they said, you know, he can be a little hard to take. But, I mean, he loves movies. You got to love him. He loves movies.
He does love movies.
And you can tell every time he makes a movie, it's always just the tiniest little details are.
That's true.
And he's going to stop. He says he's going to stop at 10, so maybe There might just be what, one more left, and he might just hang it up.
Kill Bill 3.
Yeah.
All the Western scenes, too, were amazing. Yeah. Loved them. Great.
I mean, just Brad's scene, or not Brad's, Leo's scene where he's got the kid on his lap.
Oh, my God, that was great.
That speech was just...
And that was a real that was an actual director who was a... There were a couple of real people that they...
I still love when she's like, I have pants on.
The part of the...
Sometimes
the,
I just throw my...
Sometimes I just throw myself onto the floor.
That little kid was so good.
The end of that scene was so funny. Where he was like, that was the best.
And he starts tearing
She's like 8 years old.
He's like crying.
But he needed that validation from somebody.
And also that whole beginning where she's all, I feel if I break character, it kind of detracts from my performance. It's like,
and he's just like,
where did they find this kid?
The only bummer about this movie, the only bummer for me,
be careful,
was watching, making Bruce Lee kind of an arrogant gas bag. That was the only bummer
like
part.
I know.
I did not like that.
His family's not digging it. His daughter,
that bothered me.
His wife and his daughter aren't digging it. They said,
I understand you want to make...
Why make him a punchline?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Especially for the respect that Quentin Tarantino seems to have for those movies.
They thought he was a fan, so I don't know why it was necessary.
That was hard to watch.
That was a weird... I mean, it was cool. I just wanted... It's like, okay, he's going to beat him up, and it's like, okay, he gets... You know, it's like, why
made him a punchline. Why do it that? I don't know why that was necessary.
And his wife made a good point. Like, you know, or his daughter made a good point. She said, my dad had to make it, like, you know, he had to go against, you know, racism and the establishment to, like, become what he was.
In 69, he was putting up with that shit.
Yeah.
So why have to do it now, 50 years later?
Yeah. That was a little bit of a bummer.
And I don't know why it was necessary. It's a cheap shot. There should have been another way to show what a badass that character was. You know,
Brad Pitt.
Cliff Booth, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was necessary.
Instead of beating up a, you know, martial arts icon.
Yeah, throwing him into a car.
I mean, he's a hero to a lot of people.
That was a bummer for me.
Why
that,
do it? You know?
That I did not like. That's going to keep this movie from getting a good higher score. Honestly, I really was bothered by that.
Yeah, yeah. You could take that out and it wouldn't hurt the movie. You know?
Oh, no. That was a little bit of a bummer. Mm. Justine, what did you think? Aside from the Bruce Lee scene.
I love seeing men cry, so.
Well, you saw Leonardo cry.
Those tears went down, and I was like, okay, I got him.
Some of those scenes are so funny, too.
His tears what did he say?
I love when he's in the trailer trying to pep talk
himself. No, when he gives him the sunglasses, and he's like, never show a Mexican.
Oh, don't cry in front of the Mexican.
Yeah, don't cry
in front of the
Mexican.
Never cry in front of the Mexican.
Oh, like, no, when he's in the trailer, and he's talking to himself, giving him a pep talk, and the end of it, he goes, if you don't fucking get some, I'll blow your brains out in the pool tonight. Crazy.
Yeah.
And then he takes one more swing of the flask. He's all, never,
he,
never.
Tosses it.
You know, throws it out the door.
The only thing that I was confused by, John, and maybe you can help me here, the movies that he made where he thought he was going to have a career, and he made the one where he's a...
14 Fisks of McCluskey.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of parallels to, like, Clint Eastwood's career.
Yeah, but I thought that would have been the kind of movie that he would have made when he was going to Rome and ended up making later in the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what they were trying to parody, like what kind of...
Like Where Eagles Dare or something, maybe, or something like that. Maybe.
But, definitely felt like
But like
Dare.
a lower budget knockout.
Yeah, you know what's... Because what it is those movies are out there, but unless you're like a Tarantino, you're not aware of them. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of these... I'm always amazed when he throws a title out and you go, Jesus, I never heard of that movie.
Yeah.
Because he likes that grindhouse stuff. So even in the 60s, you'd find things that were like a lesser version of Where Eagles Dare or Kelly's Heroes.
It might have been like a United Artists movie. Or,
yeah.
Not United, American International version.
Yeah, or maybe just a step above, like something Columbia just cranked out. It wasn't like a picture, but it wasn't like a Roger Corman picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then all those, they really hit it on the head with those spaghetti westerns.
That was cool when you did those.
I mean, the posters.
Yeah, Nebraska Jim. I want to see Nebraska Jim.
Yeah, because that was supposed to be a takeoff on Nevada Smith, which was a Stephen McQueen movie.
Yeah. I love it.
Nebraska Jim. But that 14 Fists of McCluskey, they say. He comes up with these titles. You wish it was a movie.
Yeah. Justine, so did you appreciate all of like The Great Escape and the Steve McQueen references?
I appreciated you for making me watch all those movies prepping for this.
That makes you feel good. Listen, I'm sharing my love of movies with you. I'm not making you, but I appreciate that you...
You're making you.
But yeah, I love The Great Escape part. That was
You were the first person I thought of.
I was the first person I thought about.
You're like, I like that movie.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, this is for me.
Yeah.
Justine's all,
Justine's you're like looking behind you. And
they did such a great job of superimposing him.
Yeah, it doesn't look too bad either.
It didn't look that
bad. It was flawless. Yeah.
Are you looking like, behind you to see just, Quentin Tarantino like, hey, giving you a little finger gun?
Yeah, he does
like,
the finger gun to the thing. I love that. I love that Timothy Olyphant's like, let me get this straight. Is it true you almost got the McQueen part in The Great Escape?
Yeah. When he said that, I was like, oh my God. I know that movie.
You're like,
And I love his little, like, well, it was all, I was almost considered. So I was like, in the, you know, four other people in the running.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wasn't called. So in that way, yes, I almost got it.
Timothy Olyphant had a great little part in that.
James Stacy, who's a real guy.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's the, when they show him on his motorcycle, I think that actor lost an arm and a leg in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to think what movie, he was on a show or a movie or something. I think, look it up, but I think that's why they showed him on the motorcycle zipping out of there. Because he got in this terrible accident and lost an arm and a leg. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. Patrick?
It was wonderful. I had a lot of fun. I do agree with the Bruce Lee thing. I think it was a funny scene, but I don't think it was necessary as far as like
how
to portray it.
Yeah, it did nothing to help.
Because when you saw him as Bruce Lee, that was a pretty exciting scene to be like, oh, cool, Bruce Lee's in this. And then it went a completely different direction. It just didn't really do any respect to him. So I don't like that part. But it was fun. And the ending was, I mean, leave it to Tarantino just to have some fun with it. And that was great.
And if you weren't quite sold on the fact that Tarantino has a foot fetish.
Definitely
does. This is your movie.
Yeah, I always heard that, and now I finally figured it out. Yeah, they always said that. I go, really? I don't really notice that. And this one, it's like foot on the windshield.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess he does have a foot fetish.
We were driving home.
Dirty foot.
We were driving home. My wife goes, boy, that was a lot of dirty white feet. And I was like, wow.
And even feet just walking, he just has all these people entering the scene. You see them walking. The first thing you see is their shoe or their boot or their sandal. Mm-hmm. It's always like...
A lot of those boots were made for walking.
So but I'm
that's just what they do.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
All right, well, boom, let's give it.
I hate, though, that they didn't give much to Margot Robbie. It bothered me a lot.
Okay.
I guess she's a background, but
I'm not mad at you.
They made her really likable, which I think was a smart move because mm-hmm. like it makes you feel for the whole situation what actually happened. I think that was a good
His idea is that anytime she's portrayed in a movie, she's made out to be a victim. So this is, I think, was an his idea was... Let's show her as something more than just the victim. But I guess
she was a person in this. Like, exactly. You could tell that she cared and had a heart and was a good, genuine person.
I mean, there's small moments, but yeah, her watching her movie and her dancing up in the apartment. And
That was adorable when she was watching her movie.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
But she was also kind of a silent character, and that kind of bothered me. Mm. I don't know. I guess I just wanted more girls in the movie that weren't.
Tarantino doesn't like women. We know that.
Oh, you can tell that from the last scene. Which we won't go into, but anyone...
God, her screaming was annoying.
Yeah, it's not like you have Kill Bill.
So I knew something was different.
Well, anyone who has that... Yeah, but look...
I knew something was different when the one drives off. I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, no.
I'm sure if he was sitting here, he'd say, well, the whole idea that Kill Bill is like a female empowerment thing. Mm-hmm. That would be his take on it. Or like Death Proof. He says, they all kick Stuntman Mike's ass, you know, and turn him into
Stuntman Mike.
A crying heap, you know. So I'm sure, for better or worse, he thinks of it as a different.
Is that the same Stuntman?
No, I went back and looked. I thought, is that Stuntman Mike?
Yeah.
He's got a different name. It's like Randy or something.
Oh, that's right.
But I thought, wow, this could be Stuntman Mike who flips out later. You know?
It was good to see Kurt Russell.
He's always good.
It's always good to see Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
good.
I liked Kurt Russell.
We're going to see a lot of Kurt Russell coming up.
And that Tex guy, Rex?
I love how he got it wrong. No, it was stupider than that. Was Rex? Nah, stupider than that. Oh, yeah, Tex.
Tex, that's the guy from Glee.
Is that true?
He had blonde hair.
I've seen him in other things, I think.
And he's dating Vanessa Hudgens.
Let's give it a rating, guys.
Baby V? That's her nickname, right? Baby V?
John, what'd you give this?
Vanessa Hudgens? No?
For me, this would be like an 8.
8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not perfect, but pretty damn. I mean, I'm a sucker for a good period piece.
And the music and the radio.
Yeah, and just well done. And also, not necessarily a typical Tarantino movie in a lot of ways.
It was a much more like Jackie Brown. Which in a good way.
Which is the one I always have to tell people when they go, he's a one-trick pony. I say, well, Jackie Brown, that's a whole different kind of movie. That's the kind of movie he's capable of making. It's not all Reservoir Dogs type stuff, you know.
Jake?
I give it 8.5. Solid movie.
8.5.
8.5.
8.5 on the Jake scale. I don't know what that is.
Jesus. No, it's a stupider name than that.
It's such a great line.
The Jake Shake?
No, that's not it.
8.5 on the Jake Shake.
I like Jake Shake.
Justine.
I'll give it an 8.
Oh, an 8. That's a good one. That's good. That's high for Justine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Seriously. It's an 8. Like, the setting and the costumes were fantastic.
Details, yeah.
The details were really well done. I always appreciate that with Tarantino. He takes time and does it right. But definitely solid 8.
I give it an 8 as well. You would have gotten higher, Mr. Quentin Tarantino, except for the Bruce Lee thing, man.
Yeah, I think that definitely... I probably would have taken the movie from like an 8 to maybe a 10.
It really bummed me out because I love Bruce Lee.
And I saw him in the preview. I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
but
it was cool to have him.
I'm shaking his head like...
And then they did that.
It was unnecessary.
It was,
You didn't have to get... It just was to get a cheap laugh.
That guy looked great, though.
Did look like Bruce Lee.
He looks exactly like
Bruce
Lee.
But do you think that actor hated doing that?
I wonder.
Maybe. Yeah.
I hope so.
There's one way to find out. Let's get him on the podcast.
Okay. I was there too.
Mm-hmm.
It does make you wonder because he's doing such a good job channeling him,
mm-hmm.
the moves and the voice. And I wonder if that did bug him that
he has to do that.
I'm gonna get my ass kicked. That it's gonna be just for a
I did love when they were flashing back to her training with Bruce Lee
because he did train her.
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah, that was a cool.
And you know what? He would have been 69. He did that. Did you ever see? Marlowe with James Garner.
Yes.
Remember, he's up on the rooftop fighting
him. Yeah.
So he is working, even after Green Hornet, he's working, but it's not the top of the heap yet.
Yeah.
It's so sad. He doesn't live to see how big Enter the Dragon becomes.
Ah, love it. We already covered Enter the Dragon, and we loved it.
Yeah, it was good.
All right, guys. You know what it's time for? It's time for the Digital Movie Club. Theme music.
Dun, dun. Dun, dun. Dun.
Digital movies.
You're in the club.
I don't have any cough drops this week.
It made me laugh because Sandy actually took off her. Sandy, are you a fan of that theme, by the way?
But it's so loud.
Is it loud? We apologize to the folks at home.
Way to put her on the spot. Hey, how do you like that?
Every other week here on the old podcast, we are going through my digital movie collection. We are about to hit the 1980s. So what we've done is after we finished the 1970s, we went back and we were reviewing some stuff I added to the... to my movie collection since the last decade break.
An addendum.
Yeah, I remember when you added Zardoz.
That wasn't you.
That was a listener request. Zardoz. Yes. I love that movie.
Zardoz.
You'll always be able to say that. That wasn't my idea.
Yeah, it wasn't my idea. The worst movie we've ever done was not my idea.
It's true.
Thank you.
I wouldn't call it the worst movie.
It's certainly in the running.
Kung Fu Driving. Kung Fu Driving gets to live in our head rent-free for the rest of our lives. Shout out to at Kung Fu Driving.
Yeah, that was the bad one.
I was going to bring something up and I forgot. I meant to write it down.
No, they need to review something we hate.
Oh, they're watching Star Trek? No, it was... Who's watching Star Trek?
Brent PJ.
I'll try to think of what I was...
Or no, are they watching Zardoz too? I don't remember.
They watched 16 Candles and it was great.
16 Candles... Eduardo just said can't. All right, here we go, guys. We're going to go in chronological order, so let's pick our first movie here and get ready for an ad.
Sweeping across the country comes one of the great literary achievements of our time, a human, revealing, soul-stirring story that instantly becomes the most discussed novel of modern literature, The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath, please. I hope to put you on the waiting list. We've never had such a demand for a book. Do you have a copy of Grapes of Wrath?
Sorry, we're all sold out.
Yes, The Grapes of Wrath. Well, send me as many copies as you can. I can't supply the demand.
The Grapes of Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath.
The Grapes of Wrath.
As sales skyrocket, The Grapes of Wrath becomes the book of the nation. Everyone, everywhere, joins in the discussion of its vital problems. Due to this unprecedented popularity, producers vie for the motion picture rights. And finally, 20th Century Fox announces the purchase of the book and plans for its immediate production. a storm of discussion arouses the nation. Speculation and rumor are rife to the effect that no producer will venture to film this great dramatic masterpiece of human hearts. Daryl F. Zanuck, production head of 20th Century Fox Studios, emphatically announces that The Grapes of Wrath will be made. All of the resources of this vast studio are marshaled for the production. Wow. John Ford, Academy Award winner, is given the directorial assignment. The cast is carefully chosen to make John Steinbeck's unforgettable characters come to life. Tom Jones played by Henry Fonda.
Still going.
Matt Jones is played by Jane Darwell. Casey is played by John Carradine.
Dracula is played Grand by John Carradine.
I don't need an IMDb of every person who's in this movie.
Rosa Sharon is played by Doris Bowden.
Who was Daryl F. Zanuck's girlfriend?
Is played by Russell
of course.
Al is played by O.Z. Whitehead. Muley is played by John Quaylen.
Muley Edwards.
Connie is played by Eddie Quillen.
Police officer number 5 is played by
Ward Bond.
The Grapes of Wrath is ready for the screen.
He was.
As the motion picture captures all the drama,
Ed Smart.
Suspense, action, tears and laughter of the story that stirred a nation.
Do you have a copy of Grapes of Wrath?
Do you have a copy of Grapes of Wrath?
That's a weird way
Do
to sell it.
Do you have a copy of Grapes of Wrath?
I guess that must have been a big book because
it was huge.
No, but I mean, it's a weird way to sell the movie.
Book's
it's like,
not that big.
Everybody's reading it. Everyone's talking about it. Who has the courage to make a movie out of it? Daryl Zanuck is that man. He's going to marshal all the resources of the mighty 20th Century Fox. It's like, wow.
There you go. John? First of all, I love this book, one of my favorite novels. I love this movie. I love this version of the movie. John, talk
about, has it been remade?
Has not. Someone's had to.
Nobody would dare. I don't think it has.
Nobody would dare remake such a masterful piece of art.
Who could marshal the resources of the mighty studio system?
Sci-Fi Channel presents.
Star cast of all time magnitude.
USA Network presents.
James Z. Zarkoff.
They'd get somebody terrible.
Roger L. Corman presents. Boom. Yeah. Grapes of Wrath.
John Stamos is Tom Joad.
Anne Margaret is Ma Joad.
Tommy. Oh,
you know, it's
Tommy.
Funny because Of Mice and Men has been made about 5 or 6 times.
That's right.
They just keep, you know, this is one that they just haven't.
Amy Schumer as Grandma.
Wow.
Praise the Lord for victory. What? John, what do you think of this one?
It's a knockout. God. I don't think I ever did read the book. I think I never actually read the book. The
book is fantastic.
Of Mice and Men. And, you know, I think there's a bunch of Steinbeck they make you read in high school. I guess I never read.
You better be careful, John. This is a socialist manifesto here. So
we
should help the poor.
I know. I'm watching this going, boy, today that would be considered, like, you know, drastic. You know, what? Help the poor? Oh, yeah. Go, you're a socialist? You
yeah,
know?
Right. Well, it was the same back then, except you were a communist.
Exactly.
What? We should get equal red, equal rights? You're a red.
We're just going to beat you to death.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What is these reds, anyway?
What is it with these
What
reds?
Is these?
This one even pees red.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Remember Reds, where they beat up John Reed, and they go, this one even pees red.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Sorry, getting tongues off the.
It's crazy. You love this one,
Warren Beatty. I do. What's not to love? My God.
We're gonna find out.
It's an amazing story. An amazing story. The best acting anywhere. And John Ford, Greg Toland.
Yes.
Every shot looks like it should be hanging in a museum. Greg Toland is the cinematographer of all time.
When they're going through the migrant camp, it looks like Dorothea Lang photos.
Absolutely. Come to life.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Which one?
You can see why Orson Welles wanted Greg Toland to do Citizen Kane. He saw all these Ford movies and said, I've got to have this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best. And he died young. You know, he doesn't have a career that lasts like 60 years.
Some of that cinematography is amazing.
He's one of those guys like James Wong Howe. It's just like every frame is a masterpiece. In the service of the story, it's not just pretty pictures. It's working to advance the story, but it's just gorgeous. And he does that deep focus where you're just like, how did he do it?
You know?
I don't know. It's a knockout.
Even stuff with like Toland always shoots it with a lot of low light.
Yeah.
So even the scenes where they're in the Joad house and Muley's hiding out in there and it's just like a single candle and you just see,
Or shooting up that shot of... John Carradine in the tent talking about they're going to go pick peaches and he's shooting up so it almost looks like he's got stained glass behind him.
Yeah,
the light's coming in the tent. And Greg Toland's the greatest.
Yeah.
Just the greatest.
And it's weird to see John Ford, who is so kind of, he's a very right-wing guy, doing a movie with this kind of like left-wing message. You know, it's a very,
yeah,
but it was a good.
What was considered right-wing then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Times have changed, and it's, you know, right-wing then is not quite what it is now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think the story got him, you know. And for people that think all he did was Westerns, this is all you got to see.
Yeah.
He's not just a guy cranking out Westerns.
And and the thing is, nothing's changed. It's just the poor people that get screwed.
I know. You're watching this going, nothing has changed, yeah, pretty much.
You change the, you know, that whole scene where they're trying to get out of the town and they're like, turn around and go north. There's no work here for you, you know. And then they tell them, don't come back until the cotton's ready.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they had their use for these people, but it was like, you know, when we're done with you, you know, we don't care what happens to you. You know, when you're done, we're done with you, you go away and come back when we need you. Just like with the migrants today,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Nothing's changed. No.
It's just the color of the faces in the fields have changed.
Yeah.
You don't see a hell of a lot of white migrant workers anymore. So that's what's changed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's the same story over and over.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same story.
Poor people get screwed. I took notes this week. But let's talk to Justine. Justine, what did you think?
Oh, so boring.
Oh, you mean touching. You didn't.
Very boring. Very, very boring.
What?
So bored.
But the people. These are people. These are real people.
It's pretty, and there's actors and the characters. It's really good.
You didn't feel for their play.
You didn't feel for anybody.
No.
You didn't feel when Grandpa died. When they had to drug him to get him on the thing.
I want
to
hold Mrs. Spare Ribs.
I could have just left the note and just.
When Grandpa said that, I'm like, me too, Grandpa. Me too.
And they're trying to buy a loaf of bread for a dime.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Why is everybody in Oklahoma from New York? Give them the bread.
I know, it's like, wait a minute.
Hey.
It's like, this is an owl.
Those candies were 5 cents a piece.
Ah, what do
Dems
you
care? Penny candies.
Dems pins.
They're 5 cents a piece.
Give them the bread. Love that guy.
Yeah.
What do you mean boring?
Justine's all, I knew I was going to be in for it today.
Boring how?
Like,
in what way?
Like, I saw the beginning, maybe the first 20 minutes. I would have changed the channel if I could, but it's a movie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to keep watching it. Then I had to keep watching it. I'm like, I really want to just stop. I just don't want to continue this. But I had to watch the whole thing.
First half is a little slow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I will say that's very slow.
Yes.
Them getting to California.
Yeah.
And then it kind of ramps up because then they're trying to back and forth between all these people and trying to get work.
Because they're really setting the table for the first 20 minutes is slow, but you really have to establish that. You want to establish Tom and you want to establish the preacher.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
Those become the main characters.
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got nowhere to go.
They have to.
And that truck is not going to make. How does that truck make it anywhere, you know? Yeah.
You get Ward Bond as a cop.
I guess you either feel for him or you don't, you know?
Yeah.
Did you feel it was dated? Did it feel dated or just.
Yeah.
So would you have felt better if it would have been like he gets out of prison and they leave right away? Do you think that would have helped? Like if they would have got to the
skip the whole part.
Well, you know, you maybe.
But then you wouldn't have understood the situation and how important
it is for them
to get
to California. I
like
the priest part. I thought
the
priest was the best part of the movie, but.
Oh, the John Carradine stuff.
Yeah. I always end up by loving him.
He's cool, but I just saw Bad Times at El Royale, so then I kind of didn't trust him.
I didn't see that movie.
I
didn't see that movie.
Who's in that?
I don't know. John Carradine.
That's Jeff Bridges.
He's a preacher?
Yes.
Is
he the son of a preacher man?
And Chris Hemsworth is in that.
Would you recommend that movie? I haven't seen it.
It's not what I thought it was going to be.
So that's a no. Justine recommends a movie to me,
it looks like
no.
John Wick meets.
Kind of. It's kind of sad.
John Wick goes to
It looks like
hotel.
Someone trying to be Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like those. Remember, like years ago, they were doing those eight heads in a duffel bag.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
2 days in the valley.
Yeah. It looks like somebody trying to do Tarantino.
It was a light watch for me, but.
It was no Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, God. Grapes of Wrath is just a sleeper for me. It's like a little lullaby. Just to go to sleep soon.
Well, she likes the world. She's like fighting the Nazis, all action.
So she's gonna love Sahara.
Yeah.
She probably saved it all for Sahara.
Her eyes rolling tells me otherwise, but
it's a great week. Great week.
She just doesn't like Humphrey.
This is like one of, for me, this was a great week. I was like, I was in
Most people would put Grapes of Wrath in the top, you know, 50 movies.
This is one of my top movies of
all
time.
And it's 1939, so when they go 39, you know.
No, it's 40.
40.
Oh, is it?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, so it doesn't make it into that.
No.
Mm-mm.
Is it 40?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, wow.
That's 129 minutes of my life.
Wow. That's how you know she didn't like it. She knows exactly how many
seconds. 104, it's 129 minutes of you caring also, about other people.
She also writes down the exact time for record keeping, too.
No, I get the yeah, that's true.
I like to track how many minutes we wasted.
129 minutes of caring about other people's plights. That must have been what a...
So you didn't, at the end, you didn't tear up when he's kissing nope. his mom goodbye.
Oh, man.
Nope.
We're not the kissing. Oh, and then the way she just says Tommy when he leaves. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
100%. Wow.
4 out of 4 from Roger Ebert. 8.1 on IMDb.
Most people consider this like the...
Release date March 15th, 1940.
Oh, wow.
The Joad clan introduced to the world in John Steinbeck's iconic novel is looking for a better life in California. After their drought-ridden farm is seized by the bank, the family, led by just-paroled son Tommy, loads up a truck and heads west. On the road, beset by hardships, the Joads meet dozens of other families making the same trek and holding on to the same dream. Mm. Once in California, however, the Joads soon realize the promised land isn't quite what they'd hoped. Academy Award for Best Director.
Is that right?
Academy Award for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. For Jane Darwell.
Wow. Yep. How about that?
Yep.
Yep.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Justine?
Oh, I think you're supposed to flip. 0.1.
Joad is a mama's boy. I loved it.
0.01.
Did they make you mad? Did they make you mean mad?
When she's doing the earrings in the mirror,
oh.
And she's remembering better days, man. You know, and...
Terrible.
Mom's the glue.
And then she gets the last line. Is that in the book, that last line, or did they add that? Where she goes, we're the people, and you can't lick us.
I don't remember.
I think they might have added that so it wasn't such a downer ending.
No, yeah, because the end of the book is her breastfeeding this man. The baby dies. Rosa Sharon has the baby. It's stillborn. And they're trying to help these people in a flood. They're hiding in a barn. It's a boy and his son. And the dad's starving. And so Rosa Sharon breastfeeds him. And that's how the book ends.
Jesus.
Because I think they said we have to... We can't go out on her waving goodbye to Tommy. So I think that, that the guy that wrote the screenplay added that, where she goes, "We're the people, and we can't be licked."
Women's life is like a river. It's got eddies and waterfalls, and men live.
You know, every once
like,
in a while they
like
get
jerks.
They get jerked over here.
Every once in a while they get it right. The Academy gets it right. You know,
boy,
the Oscar for that.
She did a great job.
Yeah,
Patrick, what did you think, man?
This movie and book was huge. Because a lot of it was based on where I grew up, the general area, because it's right where Steinbeck was writing. He wrote in Salinas, California.
Mm-hmm.
It's really close to where I grew up, and it was big in the community, and we all read it in high school and stuff like that. And, we have a huge migrant farm community where it touched home to a lot of us, but it's a great book, and it's a great movie.
You liked it.
Yeah, it's not my favorite, but it does reach into a lot of plights that people were going through during the time, and it's tough. Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of parallels for today.
And you get to hear Henry Fonda say homicide.
Yeah. I mean, the only gripe I have with this movie is it's way too easy to kill people. Whack!
Beat him
oh,
in the
shit,
face.
He's dead.
Beat him in
literally
the face.
Punched him once.
What about when the cop shoots the old lady in the camp?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And what does the other cop say? Well, those 45s sure make a mess, don't they? It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's horrible. Mm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, that they
but,
do.
But, I mean, between Steinbeck's books, I definitely think I like Mice and Men more.
Just because of Lenny?
Yeah, it that one's got a little bit more heart to it.
He sure knows how to rip your heart out.
Oh yeah,
Steinbeck knows how to rip your heart out.
Well known for that.
Yeah, Mice and Men. If you're not crying at the end,
this book was actually banned in Salinas because a lot of the farm, didn't want people reading the book because it was pro labor. It was people being organized and fighting for better wages. And
did anything come out of any legislation? Anything come out of the book?
It's possible.
Sometimes
before my time.
I'm trying to think. There are books that came out and then. Oh, I know. I was a prisoner of a chain gang.
I
was a fugitive from a chain gang.
Or Upton Sinclair.
You were a fugitive from a chain gang?
Yeah. But that movie led to some actual legislation that I was a fugitive from a chain gang.
Well, Upton Sinclair ran the jungle.
They tried to get rid of... Oh, that's right, the jungle. Mm-hmm. And that is because Teddy Roosevelt was reading the book. They said he's eating breakfast, and he reads the book, and he goes, "Dear God!" You know, he reads about the guy they find at the bottom of the vat, and he's all,
yeah,
"Shit!"
Exactly.
Teddy Roosevelt going, "Shit!"
He did a spit take. He spit his breakfast.
His oatmeal all over the place.
And he went, "Dear God!" And then he said, "That's fucked up. I'm going to do something about it."
Yeah. I can't not imagine Teddy Roosevelt now.
And that's
the
man on the Mount Rushmore.
I feel like Tarantino can make that movie.
Spits the sausage out, just like,
projectile vomit. Yeah.
Son of a bitch. So I wrote down a couple of lines that struck me. One was the "don't come back until the cotton is ready."
Yeah.
So these people have a use, and then until then, we don't care about you, which is the same now. And then a line from Tom when he says, "They're working on our spirit, trying to get us to cringe and crawl," mm-hmm, you know, and they being, you know, the rich, the people at the top,
right,
you know, in this case. And there's that whole great scene where he's like, "You like, who do I shoot?" And he's like, "The bank manager?" "No, the bank manager, you know, well, who, what about the bank manager? What about the president of the bank?" "No, he has to answer to the investors." "Okay, who do I, you know?"
Right.
He's like, "Nobody.
Who do I shoot?"
Yeah.
Right.
You know, no, you know, Wall Street, you know, like, what are you going to put? There's no, it's basically the idea that you're powerless against, you know, this faceless.
And who do you even take up arms against? Yeah.
Yeah. And then another great line from the mom at the end is just saying how rich people die off because they have children that are no good.
That are weak.
I thought that was really, 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 for our times now. Speaking of...
Don't spoil your kids rotten.
Yeah, who do we have that's the son of a rich guy who's got rich sons?
Don't spoil your kids rotten because they may become president.
Yeah, there you go, John.
Yep.
Wrong.
Because in America, anybody can be president. And I do mean anybody.
Especially if you can pay for it.
They will let anybody be president.
That used to be...
I know. Something. Used to say, like, Lincoln. They go, you know, he grew up in a log cabin. Anybody can be... In America, anybody can become president.
That was something... That used to be a positive.
George Carlin even said that. He says, in America, anybody can be president, and that's the problem. And that was before Trump. He said, you know, this is the problem. Anybody can be president with enough money and enough goons.
How about a penny candy?
That gets me every time, that just whole scene.
Yeah, and then the truck drivers paid for it, gave him $2 to pay for it.
She goes, "Truck drivers.
I don't fucking..."
I know she said it like it was a bad thing. She's like, "Fucking truck
drivers." No,
no, she's saying that they're like super caring and kind. I'm like, truck drivers?
You never know.
What I keep thinking the next guy in the door is going to be Joel McRae and Veronica Lake.
Yeah, from Sullivan's Travels.
I lost my dime.
That's it.
Go ahead, have a couple donuts. I'll never get rich.
One of my friends is a truck driver. Very nice guy.
See?
Very
truck
generous.
Drivers.
Fucking truck drivers.
I love it. I love this whole movie.
Teardrop.
I like to mention Pixley in the San Joaquin Valley. There's some real towns mixed with some fake towns.
Patrick, how close were you to Salinas? What town were you in?
I was in Sonoma, so it's a couple hours. It's like 2 or 3.
Okay.
But it's not that far. I mean, and it's literally displaced. You could.
My buddy lived in Soledad, and then he lived in Salinas, and we used to hit the John Steinbeck Museum.
Yeah.
Because it was the only thing in town. There was nothing to do.
No. Yeah, like... I've been to the John Steinbeck Museum, too. It's just something you did.
Sure, if you grew up there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you look at, like, even the way, if you watch like Of Mice and Men, like you watch that movie, it looks like it was filmed in our town pretty much. It's crazy. And same thing with this, like it looks pretty close.
So when did you come to LA?
2007.
How old were you?
16. So.
All right, guys.
But yeah, it's definitely like
imprinted on you.
Yeah, it's just, it was something that kind of stuck with a lot of us too. And I mean, that was one of the nice things about growing up there is, like, you could tell people took something from it. And, you know, while we still have a huge migrant farm community, it's very much part of the community. It's not separate, which was always good.
Mm.
I think that, you know, kind of a lot of people learn something from that. Mm. But, yeah.
Let's talk about it, guys. Let's talk about those scores.
Okay.
John?
It's a 10.
Jake?
I give it a 7.5.
Patrick?
It's 8.5.
I'm going to give it a 10. And let's move on to Sahara.
Shit.
I give it a 7.
Wow, you hate it.
You hated it when you gave it a 7.
All I said was boring. Did I say I hated it? No.
I said it was boring. When you say it's boring, that implies that you don't like
it. It was still a good story.
Ah. It's just the longest story in the world.
See, like, you always pull that out of the hat. We think you hated it, and you go, I didn't say I hated it.
But you watch Lawrence of Arabia, everything else is like
Lawrence of Arabia is a great story. It's just really long. But that one didn't bore me.
So you think this is a good story?
This is a good story.
Enough to get
it
a
just
seven.
Bored me.
That's interesting. It's really and she always holds bored. Back. She always holds back.
And she'll that's go, how I was when I watched it. I'm like, okay. I
we should it. Really we should have like a separate like website that's like betting on what Justine's gonna do.
We should take
what's
odds.
Gonna do.
What everyone's gonna lost money right
what's
now.
What's the over under?
Everyone's like, bet? Oh, she's gonna get her to five.
I thought it
five.
Was gonna be like a three.
I thought she was gonna go Casablanca.
There's that one guy who's like, she's giving it a seven. She's gonna think it's a good story. She's just gonna think
we
it's
could
long.
Be making some money here.
It's a better story than Casablanca.
Fuck no.
All right, guys. Speaking of Humphrey Bogart,
that's a whole other show. Jesus. I would argue that the mechanics are almost the same.
Yeah, it's definitely the plight of the downtrodden.
Somebody trying to make
movies.
A difference. Yeah.
I don't have a trailer for this one coming up, but
which
we
one
did.
Is it?
We did watch 1943 Sahara. This is an interesting movie because it was made during the war. It's directed by Zoltan Korda, who written by John Howard Lawson. And it stars Humphrey Bogart, Bruce Bennett, J. Carroll Nash, a bunch of other people, including Lloyd Bridges. I'm going to look at that. I was wondering where
was
they filmed it.
I was curious to see if they filmed it like out in California, like in the desert,
right.
Or if they actually went.
No, they couldn't have. There was a war going on.
They could have found those dunes in California, I'm sure, right?
I'm going to look.
Isn't there some place in California that would have dunes like that?
Sure, or you could just.
Sure.
They filmed it in Eagle Pass, Palm Springs, Brawley, Yuma, Arizona, Zizix.
Isn't that great?
Zizix. Yeah. They filmed in Zizix.
In the Mojave.
Where the fuck is Zizix?
On the way to Vegas.
Is it?
Zizix
you don't
Road.
See that sign? That is the most iconic sign on your way to Vegas.
Well, obviously not because I don't remember it.
You don't go to Vegas.
You know,
I've gone to Vegas twice.
My great-grandmother lived in Brawley, and there really is just nothing out there. It's just, it's just sand and sun, you know.
No. How is it spelled?
Z-I-Z-Z-I-X.
Z-Z-Y. The following program is seen statewide on California Public Television. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Huell Hauser, and here we are on this absolutely beautiful morning, standing right on the side of busy Interstate 15, just a few miles from the Nevada state line. Now, we've pulled off to the side of the interstate because of a road sign. A road sign that has to be the most unusual and baffling of any road sign you'll see on the side of any road anywhere in California. And there it is right there, ZZYZX Road.
He's so happy.
Now it's impossible to travel down this interstate, see this sign, and not wonder what in the world is going on here.
What in tarnation were they thinking?
What in Sam Hill's going on here?
That's amazing.
I pay you boys to lay a little track.
Okay, guys, before we start this segment.
That's amazing.
Everybody gets three swallows of water, okay? Three swallows, no more. Three swallows. Three swallows.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Sahara, 1943, Humphrey Bogart.
Send the Italian over.
Yeah. Giuseppe. Let me
three
tell you,
swallows, Sandy.
Let me tell you what this got on IMDb. It has 100% on. It has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yes.
Sahara.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
John, you don't like it or what?
I liked it, but I didn't think it was going to get 100 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, it might be because it might be all the original reviews.
Oh, yeah.
Set in the Libyan desert in 1942, where a group of American soldiers become isolated in their tank during the retreat of Al Alamein. As they drive across the desert, they pick up a group of Allied stragglers, but with the supplies of fuel, food, and water running low, they try to reach a desert fortress. But a large German detachment is also heading there. Released in September 2nd, 1943, Columbia Pictures, Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor in a Supporting Role for, I believe it was J. Carroll Nash. Academy Award for Best Sound Mixing, mm-hmm. and Academy Award these are nominations for Best Cinematography, black and white. All right, guys, who are you? So none of you had seen this before.
Nope.
Nope.
John, I'm most curious about you because you're a big Humphrey Bogart guy. you had never seen this movie before. I talked about it before. What did you think?
I liked it. I don't think I'd rate it high amongst Bogart films. I got a lot of favorites. It was very good, very solid, but I just would not rate it, you know.
It's much more of an ensemble piece than a Bogart piece.
It is. It really works. Everybody's great in it. But yeah, I guess when I think of other Bogart movies that I would rate higher, like Big Sleep or Maltese Falcon or The Caine Mutiny even.
Yeah, I tend
Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
I tend to think of this less as a Bogart movie, more of a war movie.
Yeah, and like you said, it's an ensemble piece. He's not really the centerpiece.
Yeah.
Everybody's got almost an equal part.
But he was perfect to play that role, I felt.
Hard-boiled.
Yeah.
And also, like a lot of Bogart characters, you know, you know, he's like, when they say, you know, who are you going back to? Nobody. The Army's my home.
Yeah.
He's always this guy who's renounced everything. I got nothing to lose. I'm in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way he was in Casablanca. It's like...
Yeah, that you needed that character kind of.
Yeah.
You needed that kind of that.
He does the right thing. He's hard-boiled, but he always does the right thing.
Everybody else kind of can do the...
What does that term? Mean?
Hard-boiled?
You never heard that?
No.
A hard-boiled detective story?
No.
That's like Washboard Abs. She's heard these things that have been around forever and goes, who
what
says that?
Hard-boiled?
You've never heard that term?
Yeah,
hard-boiled detective.
No, I'm just
like, why does he keep bringing up food? Yeah, it's like pancakes, you know?
No, hard-boiled. That's a, I don't know. There was a movie called Hard-boiled that was an... It was an action movie.
It means tough.
Yeah.
It means tough.
Yeah. Grizzled.
I mean,
that used to be
washboard
a
abs.
Yeah, exactly. That was a term that everybody used. As a fact, you know exactly what, in those old days, I guess, evidently, you'd know exactly what that person was like. You know, boy, he's really hard-boiled.
In ye old times.
Hard-boiled.
I love that. We've gotten to the point where that's now antiquated. I guess nobody does say that anymore.
No, that's hard-boiled detective. Hard-boiled fiction? You've never heard any of that?
Yeah, Frank Miller, right? Was that Jeff Darrow and Frank Miller did that whole comic series, Hard-boiled?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, you know, Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe, they were considered. I mean, that's the first thing you see in a synopsis. You know, hard-boiled, you know. Jack Webb, right? What would you call him?
B. So this is the definition of hard-boiled from Merriam-Webster. A, devoid of, well, one is, of course, an egg boiled into both.
Okay, wait, what white, about Urban Dictionary? Yeah. I want to know what that means.
Do they do old stuff or just new stuff?
Urban Dictionary refers to the movie.
Oh.
They all refer to the movie.
Because it's more contemporary.
A, devoid of sentimentality, tough. A hard-boiled drill sergeant is the example they give. B, of, relating to, or being a detective story featuring a tough, unsentimental protagonist and a matter-of-fact attitude towards violence.
Hmm. Hard-boiled.
I love that. So for the rest of the show, you're going to hear this. Hard-boiled.
I like a soft-boiled egg, though.
Keep in mind, you like the spice.
Is that why you're dating Patrick?
I love the spice.
Exactly.
Girl.
So, poor Patrick. He takes a lot of abuse. But
yeah,
you
just play your Minecraft.
Is he playing Minecraft? I can't see him. I was going to have Sandy spy on him for me. Sandy, please take pictures and send them to me.
Hey, if Eduardo was sitting
yeah,
there,
Eddie
hey,
would have.
For $2, I'll tell you he was playing.
Hey, $2, I'll tell you what game he's playing.
$5, I'll rat him out.
So, but John, you did enjoy this movie.
$5, I'll take
it. I really enjoyed it. It's solid. I wouldn't put it in the category of masterpieces.
No, this is a programmer for sure. This is what they used to call a programmer
exactly.
Back in the day. It was kind of like...
It's solid, but yeah. I'm not going to put it with Maltese Falcon or The Big Sleep
yeah, it's
or
not,
Key Largo.
Yeah, it's not trying to...
If you were going to do 10 Bogart films, would this be in that 10?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, but I did enjoy it, and everybody's good. Even the guys that just are barely in it, you know.
Like Lloyd Bridges?
Yeah, and that's got to be his first movie, right?
He's so young.
I don't think... Did he do anything before
Kathy,
that?
And then he just...
Yeah, he's super young in that. I didn't think he went back that far. I always think of things like High Noon.
Yeah.
I thought maybe High Noon was his first movie. Mm-hmm. I'm going, Jesus, this is 10 years before High Noon.
And he was British.
Right.
Jeff Bridges' dad.
I love... This is one of those World War II movies where everybody's a different nationality.
Yeah.
So, okay, you got your guy from Paris. You got your guy from Dublin.
South Africa.
You got your guy from Australia. Yes.
South Africa.
And where was Jambi from?
He was a Sudanese.
Yeah,
Sudanese, yeah.
So everybody's represented. And that was really interesting, the Italian guy. And he's not really on board with El Duce anymore. You know, he's all...
It's kind of interesting.
When you got a wife and kid, you kind of get along to go, you know, go along to get along.
It's kind of interesting how they kind of play up the idea that... Because I don't think Italy had switched yet in the war.
Right.
And they play the idea that the Italians are bad, but they're not as bad as the Nazis.
Yeah,
kind of.
I noticed that.
Like that kind
they
of
said,
like...
Oh, they're drawing a distinction here.
Yeah.
I don't think they... They've I don't think Mussolini's gone down yet, but it looks like maybe...
they don't blindly follow Germany.
Yeah. They kind of see him. There's a difference. And then there's that whole idea where the French tells him, like, you don't know the Nazis. Like, maybe that was someone... There might have been people who were involved in the movie who knew or had maybe escaped.
And he was with the Free French. Nazi Germany. And he said, I saw so many people shot down, I figured I should go where the shooting is, you know?
Yeah.
That was something. That was a great character. You know, it's like, why are you here? It's like, well, I was in the French Resistance, and, you know, I wanted to go where there was more of a chance of doing something.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I thought it was a really solid movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really a deep message, but just well done. Yeah. And kind
and
of
probably meant a hell of a lot more in 43.
Yeah,
know?
Sure. This is a movie that was definitely made for, we had just won the Battle of Al Alamein. So it was kind of like the Allies had won that battle. So it was the idea to, like, kind of give people at home something to.
You know, Warners seem to always be. Right, you know,
this was Columbia.
Oh, it was Columbia,
yeah,
wasn't it?
This was Columbia.
That's right. This
they
is
were
nuts.
On it,
which is also why I think it feels a little less like a big movie. Columbia was kind of a lower budget than definitely lower budget than
then
Fox.
Universal.
Or, yeah,
they were the little, they were the minors. They weren't the majors.
Yeah, this was an A picture for Columbia, but this probably would have been a B picture at any
other
studio.
You're right.
Yeah,
it has that look of a Warner Brothers movie, though. Mm. And I don't. They must have loaned them out because this would have been between Casablanca and To Have and Have Not.
Yeah.
This is when he, so they must have loaned him out because he was a Warner Brothers contract player. Yeah. But you're right. For Columbia, this was an A picture.
Yeah. This would have been maybe a B movie somewhere else.
This would have been, maybe for Warners, this would have been like Across the Pacific or Passage to Marseille, you know, one of those, you know, just not the top of the line. But
what?
Great production values.
What movies?
Across the Pacific.
Well, they cranked out a lot kind
during
of like,
the war.
Because if you waited too long, it would be like old news. It's kind of like they kind of lucked out with Casablanca because that was where the meeting was.
This was ripped from today's.
And headline. They're like, my God, we got all this free publicity because everything on the front page is about the meeting in Casablanca.
Yeah.
And now with Sahara, they probably were like right on it, you know? Yeah.
Jake, what did you think, man?
I thought it was good. Yeah, it's not the most amazing movie. It's not my favorite Humphrey Bogart movie, even though this is only my second one. So, a little something for you. But it was, you know, it's solid.
Yeah.
Characters are all great. Yeah, that's about it. It's solid.
Got to see a lot of Nazis go down.
A lot of Nazis. There was one line in there in particular that made me laugh a lot. It was the one where he was like, hey, do you hear anything? He's like, I hear nothing but static and Heil Hitler.
Yeah, on the radio?
Yeah.
I like this type of movie where it's like it's kind of like a Western where you're kind of like Rio Bravo. It's
but Nazis.
Two or three guys and they're trying to hold out against, you know, this bigger... And the whole ruse they're running, where, like, we've got all this water, and if you guys want it, you can have it, but you got to come, you know, give us your guns, come get it. Justine, what did you think? You're a big World War II movie guy. See, this is hard for you because you hate Humphrey Bogart.
He didn't smile a whole lot in this.
But I know that... But
smiled a lot more in this movie.
I liked him better in Sierra, but... I don't know.
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
I love the characters. I just didn't need him.
See, that's what I mean. I knew that you would like this movie.
I liked the movie. I just wish it wasn't him.
What if he wasn't in this movie?
That'd have been good.
Who is
a good character. It's just I didn't need him.
See, most people fell in love with Humphrey Bogart when they saw Casablanca, and you didn't.
No.
Most people, that's when they began their film love affair with Humphrey Bogart. So if you didn't love him in that, the chances of you loving him in any other movie is not going to happen.
I kind of like him in Sierra Madre from
he's
the beginning.
Because he's such an asshole.
Yeah. You know what? He's playing asshole. To what I think he is.
So let me ask you this. If we took Humphrey Bogart out of the movie, who is your favorite character otherwise? Like, who would you like? Who?
I liked all the side characters. Those are all my favorites.
Yeah, they're all really well
but
done.
But if you were to pick one?
Probably Frenchie. I like
everybody likes Frenchie.
Frenchie. Yeah.
Jambi's great because when he's in the well, you see what he's got to go through to get the
Tambool.
Water.
Tambool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy what he's got to do to collect all the water.
Yeah.
He puts it in a little like tin and then they pick that up and then they pour it in a bucket.
Yeah.
And it takes forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's just down there like.
You need water?
Yeah. And he's down there. He's not cheating. He's only licking the water off of his.
Ugh.
Like, who wouldn't? I would have just been down there like, okay, set the bucket down. I would have been laying under the drip.
Just, I thought about that. How are they going to know?
Until they get back.
How are they going to know? You could just say, we're all out, you know?
Three swallows.
And then when he runs after the guy, it's like, I'm going to die, but I got to stop this guy.
Yeah. And he gets to take down the Nazi.
That's a hell of a scene.
Yeah.
He ended up getting the water anyway.
He gives him the thumbs up.
That's like jumping on a live grenade. I have got to run out. I'm going to get blown away, but I've got to stop this guy.
But at the very end, I mean, it's so badass to see someone with one, like, few people, and they have all those prisoners.
German
soldiers. Yeah.
It's just so badass.
And I like the Twilight Zone ending that the shell opens up the well. Uh-huh. Because I love when, because you almost imagine if it was modern day, when he's going, come on up here, come on, swim in it, roll in it. You can imagine just going, you Nazi bastards, or you know,
you Nazi cocksuckers. Yeah,
exactly.
If it was Samuel L. Jackson, he would have been like, come on up here, you dirty, rotten motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. But that is a great scene where he's like, and then they're like, what the
You're right. Yeah, that's like a Serling. That's a Rod Serling ending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, we got our miracle. Yeah. But look what we had to do. We lost everybody.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, that's pretty
You're best, right. It's like two people marching 100
Yeah, there's just very few
the
of them.
The fact that he doesn't even believe that the water's there. Like, he double takes and looks at it and goes, wait, what?
Yeah.
I love when they had to like take, he's like, yeah, he's taking a bath over there.
The fake bath. That's my favorite.
So
and then
clever.
You love the harmonica.
Well, yeah, then he's like, well, then everybody else must be dead. And he's like, it's just this whole.
It's pretty light. It's just, yeah, Humphrey, he just makes me hate it.
Who would you have liked to see in the role of Sergeant Joe Gunn?
I don't know, because you were pushing back again in time, so I'm still confused, because I'm like, Charles Bronson isn't around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can't figure it out, because my actors are kind of messed up right now.
It's funny, because in a way, he's kind of like, those are the tough guys of the 60s. He was the tough guy of the 40s.
He could have maybe been in there, maybe. Or Edward G. Robinson, but he would have been too old.
But he was he's really the first anti-hero.
Yeah.
You talk
about
Eastwood and Bronson and all those guys who were anti-heroes. Bogart's the first anti-hero.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially in the movie we're going to see.
Oh, boy.
Patrick, what did you think of this film?
I love this movie.
It's great, isn't it?
It was fantastic.
It's fun.
I actually really like how low budget it looks,
mm-hmm.
because it's really focused on the characters, and I think that's huge, because there was a great cast in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
From all of the different people, they're so unique, each person is so different, that it's fantastic.
And you get to really like everyone.
Exactly.
And so when they die, you feel...
Have some cheese?
Yeah.
Piece of bread?
Same director from Casablanca?
No.
Or writers?
Zoltan Korda did a lot of...
Well, he did...
Because it's the same thing that happened in Casablanca, where we loved all of the side characters.
That was kind of a thing, especially for wartime movies, where you'd be introduced to a big group of people, they're all diverse, and one by one you lose them to the...
It was really well done. Just like some of the scenes, the chank you see rolling through the desert, like they take off and they leave the Italian guy behind.
Yeah.
And you see him struggling emotionally in the tank, going like, you know, I'm trying to save these people and he's the enemy technically. I shouldn't do this. And then he finally
stops. When Bogart stops, don't you come around and go, well, how about that?
No, I'm like, finally. Freaking Bogart.
See, Zoltan.
Fucking Bogart.
Zoltan Korda would have been, he was from Hungary. So you know he escaped.
And then they exchanged money because they were betting on it.
Oh, all through the movie. That's a problem. You owe me a buck. He made it. That's a buck you owe me.
So
that's why it's a tearjerker at the end. Oh, he didn't make it. He's like, here's
he
your
pays
money.
Him. Mm-hmm. And just like even that scene too, where he's struggling and he's dying, and then finally this Jeep rolls up and goes, oh, he's American.
Yeah,
I can't believe he didn't die.
And by the way, that's our buddy Cody from Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
It was this
Bruce Bennett. Yeah,
I know Cody.
And you get Dan Duryea as who's playing a good guy. Usually
I know. Every Bogart movie, he's the guy that gets it, like he shoots somebody in the back.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of nice. He's got that voice. Hey, what do you, what's it to you? You know,
yeah. Hey, I'm going back to Brooklyn.
Hey.
Yeah.
I really, really like this.
I love this movie. This is when my brother introduced this to me years ago, and it's one of my favorites. I just like the idea. I'm always a sucker for that kind of that vibe of
pull
like,
together.
We're outnumbered. What are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this?
Pull together.
It's just it was so well. Like just some of the scenes where you see them all sitting on the outside of the tank as they're rolling along. It's just it was really well. Cool.
It had an epic feel, even though it was a small movie. And then just the idea that they hide the tank over. We're going to put the parachute on it. And they don't know we have.
Look,
there is one great line of exposition where he's like, "Luckily that troop carrier had some mines on it." And you're like, it's like as they're burying the mine.
It's almost like it was dubbed. You know, it's like, oh. We found these mines.
Yeah. I thought that I made some notes here. You know, the line that where he says, I don't want to take on a load of spaghetti.
Yeah.
That's a great. But other than that, for a World War II movie, very low on the racism, which kind of comes across in some of those.
There was a little bit with the fact that the German guy didn't want to be touched by anyone.
But that was in character.
Yeah, that shows you what the Nazis were like.
That worked really well.
Exactly.
And it was kind of a cool line that he kind of sticks up for him. He says, "Tell him, don't worry, it won't rub off." You know,
yeah.
Like, you know.
No, they realize Tambul's like he's the number one guy. He's the one that's going to find the water.
Yeah.
They'd be dead without him. Yeah, like, exactly. He was huge.
What are you going to say, Justine?
So the Matthew McConaughey one is like this?
No, that's not like an event.
It's not a remake.
Not at all.
They actually remade this movie with Jim Belushi for like HBO or something.
And Brooke Shields.
No. That was a different movie.
There's a different Sahara.
They all have the same title, yeah.
Never mind.
All right, guys.
Even the scene where they first come upon Tambul in the desert, and then they shoot at him, and they just to turn him the other direction, and he comes to the tank, and they're like, "Wow, he's gonna take us all on."
Yeah,
just the tank by himself.
He's like, "F you guys! Oh, you're gonna shoot at me? Okay."
He's trying to take us prisoner. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm taking this prisoner with me when I go down. Like, he makes the Italian.
So was it? You were looking up Zoltan Korda. Did he do Thief of Baghdad?
He did.
And that's Rex Ingram was the genie in that.
Yeah, and he did the original. He did the original Jungle Book, as well.
Ah, with Sabu.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, let's rank this sucker. John, what do you give this one?
I give it like 7.5.
All right.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I agree.
7.5?
7.5.
Justine?
I give it a 6.
Well, that's not bad.
And if Humphrey Bogart wasn't in it?
Probably a 7.
Okay.
Patrick?
8.5. I liked it. It was good.
I give this one an 8 because I
really like it.
I do love it. It's fun.
I keep thinking, what if Justine's like Key Largo, but if she didn't dig him in Casablanca, it ain't happening.
No, it's not happening.
Because he's the uber Bogart in that.
This is the closest we're going to get right here with this movie here.
Can we step out?
The management proudly presents the motion picture, Life Magazine acclaimed, one of the few movies which genuinely deserves to be called great. I'm reading you what it says. Justine's leaving because she hasn't finished Treasure in the Sierra Leone. We don't want to ruin the... Time Magazine hailed it as something. To the screens...
Hailed it as something.
It cut off. To the screens, memorable achievements, there comes a motion picture so forcefully conceived, so notably enacted. Of such dramatic power, it will remain in your memory forever.
Well, you don't get trailers like that anymore, do you?
I told Justine before she watched this, I said, if you didn't like Humphrey Bogart before, you're going to hate him.
Well, think of the orbiting majesty of the great Madre Range, go men.
How far did she get?
Their pasts buried in silent secrecy.
Cody's still alive.
Their futures hidden in the mystery of adventure. Men drawn together in their search for gold. Dog, soldier of fortune. Howard, the old-timer. Curtin, the youngster. And Cody, the intruder. These are the men who tried to tap the treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Treasure.
Men with an oath on their lips and muscles in their arms, but men with greed in their hearts. Ready to break their backs, to sell their very souls for gold, fighting shoulder to shoulder against the forces of nature, only to find their greatest enemy is human nature.
Shut your trap! Shut up, or I'll smash your head flat!
Throw it! Without me, you two would die here more miserable than rats!
Leave him alone. Can't you see the old man's nuts?
Nuts! You're so dumb you don't even see the riches you're treading on with your own feet!
That's my favorite dance move.
Humphrey Bogart. Walter Houston. Tim Holt. Bruce Bennett.
The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to keep that dame waiting, whoever she is.
We wounded this mountain. It's our duty to close her wounds. The least we can do to show our gratitude for the wealth she's given us.
Hippie. You talk about that mountain like it was a real woman. She's been a lot better to me than any woman I ever knew.
I know exactly what you mean. You want to take it all for yourself and cut me out. I know you for what you are. A long time I've had my suspicions about you. Now I know I've been right.
So that's your stinking game, is it? Informing. I knew you was an informer. I knew it all the time. Take a look down that mountain. This means all our funerals. What's that? If I'm right in what I'm thinking, may the Lord be with us. You're not soldiers, they're bandits.
Yes. Love it. Treasure of the Sierra Madre, guys. 1948.
Batches? We don't need no stinking badges.
Directed by John Huston. Starring Humphrey Bogart, Tim Holt,
Walter Huston,
the director's dad.
They both won Oscars. It's the only time a son and a father have won Oscars the same movie. Right?
That's right.
It was director. Did he get it for director or screenplay?
I think director.
And then Walter Huston won for Best Supporting Actor. There's pictures of them on the stage together with their Oscars. I don't think it's ever happened before.
1948, and it's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, in case you didn't know that. Come on, right? Right, guys? We don't watch bad movies on this podcast.
Mm. Sorry, guys.
Well, that didn't get 100 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. John and I had seen this movie before. Justine had to leave, so let's start with Jake. Jake, what did you think, man?
I thought it was fantastic. It's the first time. Is this one of the few times you actually see Humphrey Bogart as just a dirty, rotten motherfucker?
Probably the only time.
Yeah.
Probably at least this. And probably one of the sweatiest movies we've done since the Spaghetti Westerns.
You feel like you need to take a shower. Everybody's, when it's over, you're like, oh, I need a shower. You know?
Everybody's sweaty and dirty. And by the way, that's John Huston who is who keeps giving him the money at the beginning
of the
movie.
In the white suit?
Yeah. Go occasionally to someone else, is what he says.
From here on out, you'll have to do without my...
Yeah, one for Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay.
Mm.
And those are its Oscars. It won the Golden Globe for Best Picture Director and Supporting Actor.
Yeah. I said, believe it.
Yeah, what did you think? You, great to see Humphrey Bogart like this,
great
right?
Great to see Humphrey Bogart. Because yeah, when you see Casablanca, he's just very charming, likable character who just had it rough. And this guy, he's just... dirty, rotten to the core. He's just trying to, you know, to get as much money as he can, steal from them if he can.
He starts off normal, but
he's got a small glimpse of hope, like when they're talking, when they're finally getting all their supplies together, and they're going, "Yeah, this $100 doesn't mean anything. Like, you know, it will be golden. I don't need to take everything. I just need a little bit. Like, I just need enough to survive." And
but the temptation arises, and immediately jumps on it.
And Huston knew it from the beginning. He says, "Oh, you'd be surprised what will happen to somebody when they see that much money in front of them."
That's the what I love when they're shaking hands, and Huston's just looking at him like, "Well, here we go." Yeah. You know,
was Curtis. No, yes.
Curtis. Yeah, Curtis.
Yeah, Curtis thought.
Or Curtin.
Curtin, sorry. Curtin, just such a good guy. Such a good guy.
Yeah.
Such an honest man. He's like, you know what? Yeah. He's going to go off and hang out with the natives for a little bit. I'll keep it for him.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Humphrey Bogart's just like,
he's like tweaker. He's like a tweaker. Yeah, he's like he's jonesing for the money. He can't wait.
It was just so satisfying at the end to see him just... Yeah. It sucks for Curtin and the
another Twilight Zone ending,
guy,
though.
But so great to just like that's what you get.
You're just like,
I just love that's you just laughing, get. And he says, "Ha! You better laugh. It's an expensive joke we just had.
Yeah,
yeah.
You better laugh at it.
$100,000 joke.
They almost died, but it was funny. The universe played a trick on them.
Yep. But yeah, fantastic. All the characters I thought were great in one way or another. The old man was just, he's just like your stereotypical
prospector,
like, prospector gold miner.
I need to learn that little jig he does. When he's like,
that's a hell of a dance.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember what he does. But it's great.
Yeah.
And I finally got to hear where the phrase, "We don't need those thinking badges," comes from.
Here we go. Let's listen to that.
Vengan acá todos. Vengan a ver esta palomita que me encontré en su nido. Está echadita. Oiga, señor. We are federales. You know, the mountain police.
If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Better not come any closer.
That's it. There you go.
You can hear... No, never mind.
Harvey
movie.
Harvey.
Yeah, it was good.
Why don't you try to be a little more polite?
That's a great line.
You know, this movie's full of stereotypes, and I still love it. I still like. I'm like, well, you know,
they're not.
They're not all bad. It's funny because it does between the typical Mexican bandit, which you get the stereotypical, and then it goes the other way where you kind of have a little of the white savior thing, where John Huston's like, these villagers are so ignorant they don't know how to, like, you know, pump water out of a kid's lungs, but they've survived for thousands of years, right? Yeah, he's doing that weird thing where he like pumps the, and then, you know, they're kind of, it's almost like the noble savage, like, these are the nice villagers.
It's like,
know,
he's doing some sort of weird ritual.
It's like demonized. Or, well, he said it's like Boy Scout stuff. I think that's the way you used to. I don't think they do that anymore. I think it's a way you used to try to, somebody who's drowning, you know, you try to get the water out of
you pump
you
the
use
arm.
Their arm as a crank. And
he's all, it worked for Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
But then when he's in the hammock, you know, and it's like, yeah, boy, you know, I think that would ever really happen in any village anywhere.
I was reading Roger Ebert's review, and he said that whole scene belonged in a lesser movie. Like, that's the one scene where he's like, you know, it just doesn't fit here. But, you know, aside from the fact it's the 40s, I mean, you know, I mean, we're doing it when we get to Tombstone.
We let it slide.
It's still going. So yeah, it's like, you know, Hollywood has a long way to go. We know that. But that does not diminish my enjoyment of this movie, because this is ultimately just a story of greed.
Yeah.
And what it does to human nature. Patrick, what did you think, sir?
This is a great character study. Just to see how crazy he gets over money is nuts. I mean, this whole movie is based around not having money and not knowing what to do with it when you have it and then losing it. And it's crazy. His Humphrey Bogart's character is just a spiral into madness because he has a chance to, you know, be above everybody else.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And
you see a little, and let's remember, the other two characters aren't completely innocent.
No.
They
no.
all voted to kill yes. Cody when he showed up to the camp. And you had Curtin help Dobbs beat up what was the guy? The guy who had contracted the job, which, by the way,
well deserved, because they conned him out of money after 2 weeks.
And
work.
They threw the rest of the money back at him.
Yeah,
they didn't take his
but
own
I mean,
wallet,
but again,
yeah.
they, but that
didn't
was
take it off.
That was great, dude. I watched that. I have,
and they paid for the drinks.
Yeah, they did.
That's right.
But boy,
that was
that
very
scene,
satisfying.
He just smashes him in the face, you know. So he's going to try to get away with it.
Yeah.
He got what he deserved.
He really
but
did.
That is a brutal scene. They put a beating on him.
Yeah,
they put a beating on him, and he's like, "I can't see, boys." Like, he's not even mad. He's like, "Okay, boys, you got me. I'm done."
I was kind of surprised. I'd
that probably
this.
Wasn't the first time he got his ass beat for trying to steal money from people.
But I forgot that he takes the wallet, he counts it out, and they take their share and throw the rest back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every time I see this movie, I think they're going to take the whole thing.
No.
And go, that's what you get, you know?
And you get a young Robert Blake, you get Humphrey Bogart throwing water at a young Robert, a kid, which shows you right away.
Selling the lottery tickets.
What an a-hole. But boy, that haircut looks like the best haircut he's ever had, because he's so dirty and grimy.
Yeah.
Looks good on him when
and
he's
And they cut that, and then they do that thing where you can see, because of the way the hair's cut, you can see that he's sunburned.
Yeah.
It shows you. There's a lot of little touches in there that show you, like, he's been living on the streets.
Yeah.
Would you stake a fellow American to a meal?
Mm.
Would you?
Those scenes are something, because he can't make eye contact. He's so ashamed he won't make eye contact. That's how he doesn't realize it's John Huston every time.
Yeah.
You know, the guy in the white suit three times.
But that shows you, a guy that goes from that, I can't look you in the eye, to I'm going to kill you because I think that you're going to steal my money. Yeah,
that's the greed factor. What's effective about this movie is how it's a slow boil. He starts going, you know, there's that first scene where they kind of look at each other and go, he's a little off his nut. What happened? You know, he got hit by that, you know, when the thing caved in on him.
Yeah,
they're almost like, dude, you think it's because he got hit on the head, and he just gets crazier.
I think
it
really starts when they discuss talking about dividing up the loot.
Right.
Because
he's the first one that brings it up.
Yeah, he's like, when do we divide up the loot? I think that's the first spark of him realizing, okay, this is not good.
And then all of a sudden, it's all he's thinking about.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I love the scene with the Gila monster.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Are you yellow? Stick your hand in a hole if you're not yellow.
I've heard that even after you cut his head off, it's still going to hang on to you.
Don't worry, you'll be dead before then.
I'd like to see Tambool and Walter Huston in a movie together where they're just surviving. Like, together, like this pair
of... No, you're right. You know, he's really this wise guy, and he generally does the right thing. They're no angels. None of them are angels. But he, right at the end, that last scene where he says, I'll give you this money if you'll go see the guy's widow. You know, that's a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
He says, you can have...
Boy,
can
when
have
he's
it.
When he's
if
reading...
you go talk to his wife.
When he's reading that letter, whoever wrote that letter from the wife, man, that is...
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Swift kick in the pants. So Justine's only to that part. She doesn't know. She's like, oh, Cody's here now. Who's Cody? And I'm like, he's dead in like 2 minutes.
Yep.
Wow.
She hasn't even gotten to the meat of that movie.
There's more to come. Yeah, maybe she'll get on board.
Yeah, Bogart really does descend. And it's a great role. It's a great part for him.
Mm-hmm.
And not every actor would want that role, because he's got to be so despicable.
Yeah.
By the end, he is really...
If you're listening, you've only ever seen him do Casablanca, watch this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bad man in this one.
Yeah. And
you got to say, for Bogart, he's worked the full range.
Yeah.
Because he did 10 years of playing the weasel opposite Cagney. He was always the bad guy that would shoot somebody in the back and just unredeemable. But bad guy opposite the hero, which is usually Cagney. And then he finally gets to be the hero. So like High Sierra, Maltese Falcon, he's the good guy. He's the, you know. And now he's getting to work the other side of the street again, but with much more dimension.
Sure.
So by the time he does this or the Caine Mutiny.
Oh, that's another great
one. It's he's really doing the full range. These are like human beings. He's not just the black hat. Mm-hmm. He's not just the good guy. He's playing characters with a lot of dimension.
Fred C. Dobbs, baby.
Yeah. So you got it. Yeah, he had a hell of a career. And,
yeah.
This has got to be, this and African Queen has got to be right up there. Yeah.
And this is a movie that's long. It's over 2 hours, but it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. a very, you're watching it, just watching him.
Yeah.
And it's entertaining. I can watch this movie over and over and, yeah. and never get tired of it.
It's fascinating. Just watching, just the, all those scenes where it's the three of them around the campfire
mm-hmm.
and you're watching the wheels turn. You know,
yeah.
everybody's got a different approach to how they're going to handle this. We're in the middle of nowhere with all this gold. How the hell are we going to get home?
And know? Did you notice, I don't know if you guys noticed, but as the movie goes on and you descend further and further into Bogart's Madness, there's more shots in the dark.
Yeah.
There's more of the, yeah. we're around the campfire yeah. and the light's low and yeah. it's almost like a noir.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
Yeah, it really
where
is.
Where they're shooting around the campfire
right.
and, the, you know. Jake, did you have a particular favorite scene?
I don't know. It was all pretty solid. I did like the scene where he just what was it? It was the Gila monster one, which I thought was
yeah.
really great because it's you start to see him starting to like actually like seriously go crazy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm trying to help you, and you see how divergent they've become. Where, you know, Curtin is you know holding fast, and he may not be perfect, but he's still like you know this is your. He's still kind of holding true to his belief.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this is mine, that's yours, and he's just so paranoid that he thinks everybody's trying to steal from him.
What about you, Patrick?
Oh, definitely the campfire scene where he's talking to himself. It's like full on nuts, and he's just
full
like
on nuts.
He's just like, what do I do with the body? Do I go back? Do I take his clothes off? Do I bury his clothes? Do
yeah.
Well, the vultures. They'll see the vultures. They know he's here.
How about when he goes back and the body's gone?
Yeah,
that's such a great scene.
And the music's all wah, wah, wah. He's like, oh, no, oh, no, what?
No, maybe the tiger gone. Yeah, tiger gone.
I love this one.
He's crazy.
Yeah, let's.
All the Walter Houston scenes, there's like three amazing moments with Walter Houston, you know, where you just go.
Well, the first time you meet him and he's yeah. in that. He's they're in that dorm and yeah. they're, you know, that yeah. that hostel and he's
yeah.
just telling him how,
yeah.
you know. Well, like, you know, you say you'd be satisfied with 5, then you want 10, then you want 15, then you want 20, then, yeah. you know, and yeah. he laid out the whole movie right in, like, at the get-go.
And that's exactly what happened with them. They each got, like, what, 25? And they're like, yeah, I'm cool with 25. He's like, no, we can stay longer.
Yeah.
What about 50, you know?
And all through the movie, he keeps going, well, don't judge him too harshly. If I was younger, maybe, who knows, maybe I would have taken a swing at you. It's like, he says, I don't know. He just knows. He's seen this happen so many times.
Yeah.
That he says, you know, it does something to your brain, you know?
All right, let's rank this sucker. Jake, what'd you give it?
I give it a 9.
9?
I'll say 9, yeah. I really liked it.
Let's write these down because Justine's going to...
I wrote it down.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Patrick, what'd you give it?
8.5.
John?
It's an 8.5 week for me.
For me, it's a 10.
I'm going to go 10 as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 10.
And I want everyone to say thank you to the mountain.
Sandy?
Thank you.
What'd you give it?
Thank you, Mountain.
What'd you give it,
from
Sandy?
The two scenes what? You saw, what'd you think?
TBD. Are you are going to watch it though?
To be determined.
Maybe.
Maybe.
That's
Sandy, you're going to hear your own voice when you listen to this podcast.
I love the way when he says "say thank you to the mountain," Bogart goes, "Oh, thanks, mountain."
Yeah, yeah.
He can't quite bring himself to Tim Holtz. Oh, thank you, mountain.
I saw that scene.
It's so great. He's all, oh, thanks, mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey,
treating me better than any broad ever has.
Give me $5,000. I'll say thank you, and I'll mean it. All right, guys, for the next Digital Movie Club, which is going to be in 2 weeks,
yep.
we're heading into back into the 1950s for a little brief sojourn as our Summer of Classics continues.
I love that. Summer of Classics.
John is going to be very excited. We're going to be doing 3 movies, 2 of which are extraterrestrial in origin.
Mm.
Number one is 1950s Thing from Another World. Is that 1950? Might be 1951.
Yes.
Then we're going to follow it up with War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
George Pal's classic, War of the Worlds.
The 2010 one.
Yeah, don't watch the 2010 Tom
you know,
Cruise.
Make that very clear.
Yeah, have you seen?
These are the ones from the
yeah,
50s.
Yeah, these are the 50s
it's
version.
It's like the same movie, right?
No, because you know why? Because The Thing has been remade twice.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds has been made a couple
times. Watch the 50s
yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's called Thing from Another World.
And it's not the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds.
And then we're going to watch War of the Worlds with Gene Barry. Is it Gene Barry?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, you know. And we're going to go, we're going to finish it off with Some Like It Hot.
Wow.
One of the all-time greats. Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, and our only appearance in the Digital Movie Club of Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
We get to watch a Marilyn Monroe movie?
One of her, probably her best one.
Wow.
It's a hell of a movie.
She Wants to Be Loved by You, Jake, and nobody else but you.
You know, there they do like the... when people do their lists of best comedies of all time, I think the AFI put this on the number one.
Yeah,
this is the number one comedy of all time.
Don't overhype it.
I have a tendency to do that.
Yeah, and then everybody gets disappointed.
Okay, it ain't that great.
Well, you're the only one that ends up disappointed.
It ain't that great.
It's not that great. It's terrible.
Yeah. Nobody's perfect.
We should just keep expectations low.
Nobody's perfect.
And then when it beats those expectations, we're gonna think it's better.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's how you bump
the scores up.
Have you boys seen any of these?
No.
Nope.
None of them.
None of them?
Heard of Some Like It Hot, never watched it.
Oh, I've seen World of Worlds. I've seen the original.
I haven't seen the original. I saw the Tom Cruise one.
Oh, you're going to love the original.
See, when you find out that you haven't seen Some Like It Hot, you're like this. You're like, okay, maybe you like it. It's a little movie called Some Like It Hot.
They're going to hate
it. Little thing called...
They're going to hate it.
You're like,
what do you mean you don't like it?
No. You're like, no, please don't. No, turn off the phone. No, please don't be interrupted. Please don't. Don't watch it in the car.
Justine was watching Trish and Sierra Madre in here.
In the car. On the phone. She's probably watching it now. No, she's not.
She left her phone.
Okay. I love you guys. Well, what a great episode this was. I'm glad you enjoyed them. Everyone except Justine.
Should we let her back in?
Yeah, we can let her back
in.
Let's let her back in to say goodbye.
Actually,
two, three. Justine! Justine, for John,
Blue. Like, don't you hate when they do that shit?
For John Sandy.
Wait, are we really saying goodbye?
Yeah,
bye.
It's almost
done. Come over, say bye.
For Jake.
I gotta say bye to him.
For Patrick.
Write it down.
For our new guest, Sandy. Sandy, how was it? Scale of 1 to 10.
Don't make me do that.
What?
Is the magic gone, Sandy?
It wasn't anything less than a 10.
I think the magic's ruined.
Did he write down our scores? I don't think he did.
Sandy, did you love every second of it?
10 out of 10 would recommend.
Yes.
Dang.
Write us something nice on iTunes. Speaking of which, follow us on Twitter at Soup Complex, S-O-U-P Complex. We're also on Facebook. And write a nice review wherever you find, if it's on Podbean or you find us anywhere, Google Podcasts, iTunes. Write us a nice review, please.
Nothing but good things.
Please, please, please. And watch these movies, guys. We want this to be a shared experience.
Wow, Patrick. Very consistent. 8.5, 8.5,
I told you I was having 8.5 week.
You better finish Treasure of the Sierra Madre, lady. You have homework.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah.
I mean, we're done now, so.
No, you're going to watch it. We have to watch Once Upon a Time on the Western Front.
Just out of curiosity, did you find the old one?
Yeah, I watched it.
Did you love it?
Are we talking about it next week?
We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
All right. You didn't hate it, right?
Okay. By next week, we'll be able to give you guys a little more in-depth discussion of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
We'll finally get in there.
We're going to leave you with the music from Sahara by Miklos Rosa.
Gesundheit.
Miklos Rosa.
Why are you calling back if we're just already done?
Because we wanted you to be on mic to say goodbye.
We wanted to include you.
We're not going
to
say bye without you.
I can listen to this on the podcast.
You can't. You got to watch Treasure of Sierra Madre.
You have to watch it before.
I will watch it, and then I will listen.
It's like honey.
In your ear hole.
There we go, guys. So for Justine, for Jake, for Patrick, for John, for Sandy, for myself, we say this transmission ends now. And please...
Bring your own phone.
What?
Well, your own real phone.
Son of a gun.
Bring your own phone.
Please bring your own phone. That's fine. Why? What is going on here?
Are you okay, buddy?
Please bring your own phone.
What? There's nothing but ads.
Our host is having a stroke.
That's speaking.
Fight the power. This transmission ends now. Stupid ads. I'm as penny candy.